So Tiff, remember, I need you to get the double bonded ultra premium white. I prefer to have it cardstock. So I think that's what, 500 pound. We need a nice, beautiful, bright white piece of paper because that has so much meaning. It's the hopes and the dreams and the possibilities. And I'm not going to settle for anything less.
What would you put on a blank piece of paper? If you had a blank piece of paper out in front of you, what would you put on it?
Ooh. If I had a blank piece of paper, I think...
With endless possibilities.
God, see? That's that blank canvas issue. Mm-hmm.
It's like the first page in a notebook. What do you do?
You don't ever use the notebook is what you do. You just keep it blank.
Yeah, I know. That's what I do. Just put it in a drawer and be like, oh, pretty notebook. It's so fresh.
One of these days, I'll write in it.
I usually write my name all over the first page in order to like break it in.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It looks crazy. But
can't hate your name.
Right.
I mean, you can, I guess. But oh, man, I think I would draw a tic-tac-toe board and play tic-tac-toe with somebody.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
A piece of paper.
Yeah, I like that.
Connect. What about you?
I would just write my name all over it.
That as well?
Just everywhere. Maybe every corner, maybe one really big one, maybe a couple little tiny ones. Just tiff, tiff, tiff,
so
tiff,
what
tiff,
I'm
tiff,
understanding tiff, tiff, tiff. Is if we put you in front of a wall and it's blank, you're going to end up writing your name all over it. It's like, oh no, this blank t-shirt, it's too blank. Let me just write my name all over
Actually,
it.
No, if you put it that way, I don't know. I do this kind of like swirly shell doodle that I really like. Maybe I'll do that. I'll do that all over it. Yeah.
If you have time, I would love to see this swirly shell doodle that we can then share with the listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Tiff's swirly shell doodle. That's kind of a hard thing to say.
Swirly shell doodle. I totally get
the swirly shell doodle.
I can show off my swirly shell doodle.
The SSD.
My endless possibilities. So today we are talking about the episode Job Fair, which is from season 4, episode 13, originally aired on May 8th. This episode is full of cringe. What do you think?
Full of cringe. Well, as I mentioned at the end of the last episode, I don't like this episode. It ranks up there with me with Scott's Tots.
Without it hurting me.
Right. And Scott's Tots is like on Mars in terms of how far out it is with cringe. Like that's the level of cringe. And this doesn't even get to the moon. You know what I mean? Like it's still on Earth, but it's at the top of some sort of one of our atmospheres, just sort of hanging out on one of the layers of our atmosphere in terms of how cringe it is for me. And, you know, nothing can compare to Scott's Tots. But when I watched this episode, it just, the different types of awkward that The Office brings to the table, all wrapped into one episode. So we've got Michael Scott being unaware of how like out of touch he is. We've got Michael Scott inadvertently hurting like a young, well, I wouldn't even say inadvertently, kind of vertently hurting a young person's feelings. We've got him being mildly sexist. We've got some racism thrown in there. Like there are all of these cringe factors that are wrapped up into this episode. And so I think like the way that I like to think of the rating of cringe is how much like the UK Office is this episode, is an episode. And this starts to get back toward UK Office in terms of being kind of, you know, the happy is a little harder to find. But thank God they intersperse this with happy. Otherwise, I would just be out of sorts.
So there are mainly three sections of this episode that we're focusing on. There is the office, there is the group that goes to the job fair, and then there is the group that is golfing. And I think that in every single instance, no one's really having a great day, maybe until like the very end. Jim might be having a good day. They're having like terrible, terrible days. Andy is like covered in heinous blisters and the golf games.
Sorry, blisties, please.
Sorry.
Blisties.
Blisties.
Thank you.
Blisties.
Got some blisties.
Yeah, you do.
Hit about 1,200 balls last night in preparation for today, so hands are a little tender. It's actually not funny at all. It's incredibly painful.
I hate that so much.
Fun fact about Andy's blisters. The makeup department carefully researched the correct placement for golfing blisters for Andy. So they were very well placed.
Good on you, makeup department.
And I totally noticed as a golfer, I was like, ooh, yep, I've had some of those before. Not like that. But I have had minor versions of those blisters before. So I totally get you, Andy. It hurts like hell.
Oh my gosh. I don't think I could ever golf for that long to get blisters.
Well, you hit too many buckets of balls and they show up if you're like out of practice. Anyway, Dwight is having a terrible day back in the office because no one's respecting his authority.
It has come to my attention that some of you have forgotten who is in charge here. When Michael is gone, Jim is in charge. When Jim is gone, Andy and I are in charge. When Andy is gone, you answer to me, okay?
And Michael's having a terrible day over at the job fair because he has this grand vision for how everything's going to go, and nothing is going his way because a lot of times his grand visions are very, very distorted from reality.
Yeah, I'm trying to lure these kids into my booth, but kids are very wary of being lured these days. Thank you, Dateline.
Yeah. Yes, they're so out of touch from reality, and you want to feel sorry for him and feel bad that it's not going his way, but it's kind of tough.
Right, you see the frustration he's having, right? Like, but he is just such a poor communicator and a poor planner that everything's just going wrong for him. And one of the main things that I actually wrote down in my notes was the whole idea of having Pam bring one piece of paper, which is kind of this running bit throughout the episode.
We need another one immediately.
Yeah, the booth is lame without it.
You brought the one.
Are you mental?
Michael, do you remember you specifically told me to only bring one sheet of paper? Mm. You said it only takes one sheet to make a difference. And I said, are you sure, Michael? And you said, Pam, Pam, Pam. And then you sneezed in my tea. And then you said, don't worry, it's just allergies. Do you remember that?
I don't.
At first, I think I'm mad at Pam because I'm like, why would you listen to him? You know,
exactly.
This is going to go wrong, and you should have just grabbed a whole stack of paper and put it in the car and just brought it with you. It's just like a kid telling you, I'm not hungry. And you're like, are you sure you don't want me to pack you a snack? And the kid's like, I'm sure. But you know what? You pack the snack
because they're going to be hungry.
Because a half hour in, they're going to tell you, Mom, I'm hungry. So, and what do you have? Uh-huh. You have the snack. So this is basically exactly that. It's like you knew Michael was going to need more paper. Why didn't you pack the paper? But I kind of see where she's coming from because she's forcing him to see how ridiculous his choice is. It's just like saying, fine, I won't pack you that snack and you're going to be hungry. So next time you will remember to ask me to pack a snack. You know, like I'm going to teach you a lesson. This is kind of like Pam trying to teach Michael a lesson. I'm seeing it that way. But she still should have packed that paper.
What you're saying has to be true because of how prepared she was with her response. She immediately was like, don't you remember, Michael? This happened and then this happened and then this happened. Yep. And then you sneezed in my tea and then this happened. So it's like she was waiting. It's one of those things I could totally relate where you're like, okay, I know exactly what I'm going to say whenever this ends up happening. And you've got the whole thing, the whole script is ready for you. And so dead on, she was like, let's teach a lesson here. Let's see if we can't get him to learn from that. But he ends up getting his way in the end.
But you know what really the lesson is? Pam learned the lesson that she should not try and teach lessons to someone who doesn't want to have lessons taught to them. It's just easier to bring the piece of paper, like the extra paper. I think this all just totally failed.
Yeah, there was definitely no lesson learned there.
I do love the scene when she goes back into the office and she looks directly at the camera and she holds up that paper and she walks out and the two people left, Dwight and Angela, are just like watching her and she just leaves. It's a really perfect office moment.
I feel for Pam because at times she has to be Michael's manager.
Handler?
Yeah, handler. Yes, that's a perfect way to put it. She is Michael's handler. And she does a really good job of being Michael's handler. But it kind of stinks that, you know, everybody else in the office, they kind of either ignore him or they play him up like Jim does at times, or they completely like bend to his will like Dwight does. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of the only one there that actually does handling of him. And there's nobody kind of there to help her out with that. So she does end up, even Oscar, who could do some handling, most of the time he's just like, I'm just going to keep my distance. You know what I mean? And so Pam, poor Pam gets tasked with that. And I feel for her in that moment and in others whenever she's having to do this handling.
But yeah, in general, Pam is having quite the day as well. And I would like to run through a little bit of what Pam went through for this episode. In the beginning, she gets totally sexually harassed about being eye candy. But Michael does have a second where he catches himself.
Pam will be eye candy. No, and also because that is your alma mater.
That is a little bit showing that growth there, but the rest of the episode mm-hmm. just absolutely destroys it. There's no more growth for Michael after that one little moment. And then what happens to Pam? She gets forced to bring the one piece of paper. She gets objectified again at the table.
You already met her, Pam Beasley, office hottie.
She gets harassed about her relationships, where she almost has to, like walk away from the table. She tries to apply for a graphic design job, which, woo, go Pam, like so excited yes. that you are, you know, taking control of your life and looking for something a little bit more. I'm very excited for her in that moment. But then she realizes, oh shoot, I really need to go back to school or get some sort of further education in order to get a job like this. And I think that this is a big growing moment for Pam, that we see that that's like at the very, very end of the episode. And but in general, I think like she's just having a very, very hard day. And then, but it's really nice at the end how she can come back and have this horrible day and then be really happy for Jim. You know, they have like yeah. that really nice moment at the end of the episode, and it's really very touching. So Pam was on quite a roller coaster for the day.
It was quite the ride for her. And I, you know, and sort of the people surrounding her, how they either brought her up or brought her down. And, you know, even while she was on this ride, though, she was there for others. And so mm-hmm. there's that moment where Jim is away. He's got to do a client meeting where he has to go golfing. That's why the golfing is happening. And, you know, he makes the joke, but it's also a little bit true that he, for the first time in his career at Dunder Mifflin, he actually does kind of have to try.
I do love that part, actually. We should just highlight that a little bit, because that is a really fantastic line that Jim is actually going to be trying to work today, like for the first time ever.
I am about to do something very bold at this job that I've never done before. Try.
But you see him getting more and more frustrated, sort of having his advances pushed aside in terms of winning the client.
That client stinks, by the way. I'm sorry. That's super rude of him to accept a meeting out on a course just to go play golf. And then
be like, no, I just want to play golf. Yeah, I'm using your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super rude. Not into it. I don't like it. It's slimy.
Agreed. And so he, you know, is having this frustrating moment, and even the call itself kind of interrupts things. And as he answers the phone, he's a little bit frustrated as he says, hey, I can't really talk right now. But then he and Pam talk for just like a few seconds, and she makes a joke, and then he's immediately inspired to go and try again. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really touching thing, how just that little moment that you have with your person can really make all the difference whenever you're frustrated and you need to sort of have a moment to come back to reality and you know, a reprieve from the frustrations that you're experiencing.
Hey, can't really talk now. What's up?
Just checking in. How's it going?
You know, we'll see.
I just drove 20 miles round trip back to the office to get Michael a single sheet of white paper. So I could have just had him fax it to me, I guess.
Oh, I like you.
Talk to you later.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
It's amazing how your person can do that for you. And I love seeing that with Jim and Pam, too, because it's another testament to how wonderfully real their relationship is written. You know, they have this little moment where he's honest. He's like, can't talk right now, just like you said. And the way they have the exchange on the phone. And I really like how he sweetly says, I like you. And it's just it's a nice touching moment, and you really see how they affect each other. And again, it's like the little love from Jim and Pam, you get that again. I feel like we've been missing that for a little while. Their relationship has gotten pretty stable, and we haven't really seen a lot of these touchstone moments, and this is one of them.
These cutes. Mm-hmm. So because of Dwight, you know, being back at the office and having to assert his authority, I love how Stanley just does not even acknowledge his presence at all as he's walking out. Just doesn't hear him, doesn't see him, Stanley is unstoppable as he's walking out the door. And Dwight threatens to tattle if other people leave work.
Excuse me, where do you think you're going? Oh, no, 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 no. You are not leaving. No, Stanley, do not walk out that door. If you walk out that door, so help me, I will... He left. Last time I checked, the American workday ends at 5 p.m. You will all stay at your desks until that time, or you will suffer the consequences.
What consequences?
I will tell on you.
But it ends up that everybody does leave work.
Yeah, Creed stages the coup, which is
Creed kind of leading the bunch, which is hilarious. Cupcakes out.
Pumpkins out.
Or pumpkin, that's right. I thought it was cupcake.
Extension 128.
Hiya, pumpkin. It's Creed. Say we're going to ditch this bitch. You in?
No.
Are you out? Pumpkin's out. Let's go, gang.
I like what's happening with Dwight in this episode. I like also in how we're talking. We're just following each character. Like, we now have the set of main characters that we're following, and I like how we're just following their little through lines throughout this episode. But now being on to Dwight, he is trying so desperately to enforce the authority he feels like he has, because Michael is gone, Jim is gone, and Andy is gone. So realistically,
it's his one opportunity.
Yeah, he is in charge. He is completely right in that sense, but nobody in the office is taking him seriously, and that is a huge blow to Dwight's ego.
Mm-hmm. He can't abide that.
Mm-hmm. He tries so hard to assert his authority wherever he can, and as soon as Stanley walks out, that was it for the rest of the office. Like, no one's going to be able to take him seriously. Dwight's not going to be able to recover from that. And we definitely see this happening. Everyone leaves except Angela.
So he and Angela are spending the rest of the day together.
Mm-hmm.
Very quiet, but just with the occasional sort of interaction.
I have a question for you here, Micah. And now, for those of you who are watching The Office for the very first time, please plug your ears, because I'm going to say something and I can't not say it, because I'm sorry. This is a rewatch show, so everyone maybe have seen it already. But is this the moment that something goes down between Dwight and Angela? Because there, I was paying attention. There's a moment where she is waiting at the copier, a line of two people, the only two people in the office, and Dwight is using the copier and Angela is standing behind him. She gives him like a look, or looks at him, or the camera catches a look. They just spent a very tense time, the two of them alone in the office, after having a big relationship that they broke up from each other, right? So there is still something there.
So you're wondering if this is the start of the infidelity?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's not infidelity right now, is it? But this is the start of them
rekindling something. Let's put it that way.
Now, what do you mean? If you're asking me if this is the start in the sense that they're spending all this time in the office together, and so then they realize, or are you talking about like, are you asking me, Micah, do you think that something physical went down in the office when they were together? What is your question?
Oh, I mean, it could be either, but especially the way that they leave, I think they leave together. I think that
after work, sure.
Yeah, after work.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. It's especially the way that they leave, where Angela does her whole, like, I'm marching this way and then turning this way and then getting this exactly at this time. Because you remember that at Phyllis's wedding, when Dwight and Angela were together,
right,
they did that same thing where they planned, like, okay, first you're going to go, then I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. And they went the wrong way, so Angela was kind of frustrated. It has that same feel. I would not be surprised if they went home together afterwards.
But yeah, I get the feeling they're just drawn to each other. I mean, I always feel like they can't help it, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so, too. They are... There's a spark between them, mm-hmm. and they're not going to ignore it.
Yep. So, just wanted to point that out. I was a little like, oh, look at this. Because for so many rewatches of this show, I never picked up on that before. And this time I did.
I think that it was definitely something going on. Regardless, it was an opportunity for something to happen. And we all felt that and knew what was happening there. And like Angela had spent so much time just ignoring Dwight that even the small act of him sneezing and then her, who was it that sneezed?
Yeah, no, Dwight sneezed. Dwight sneezed.
The person said, bless you.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Angela says, bless you. That in and of itself is like, oh, you know,
she's acknowledging him again.
Probably have ignored his presence mm-hmm. and existence before and is not doing it this time.
So let's get on over to the golf course because there's so much
back to the golf course
going on down here. I want to point out that Kevin, the actor who plays Kevin, Brian Baumgartner, is actually a very good golfer. And you can see that in this episode because he is the one that like sinks the very long putt, and it's so that kind of was a really fun little thing. And we also get the whole Kevin as gambler.
I'm gonna take this petty cash that I got from Oscar and turn it into next month's rent.
And he just rattles off all the crazy games that you could play while you're golfing and betting at the same time.
Hey, let's make it interesting. Say $10 a hole?
Great.
What are we talking? Skins? AC Deucey? Bingo Bango Bongo? Sandies? Barkies? Arnie's? Wolf? What?
I really like how Kevin just kind of comes from behind. We don't even barely know he's there at first.
I know. I didn't even know he was there until it's like, he just like, it's almost one of those moments where he just like slides into the scene and he's like, what? AC Deucey? Onesie Twosie?
He did. He perked up with like... Hey, we're betting on something. I can turn my petty cash around and make this month's rent. Let's do this. I love that side of Kevin.
It's like the dog hearing the treat bag opening. Yes. And suddenly it's just like the dog practically poofs into the screen like, oh, is it time? It's a treat? Okay. And he's like, betting? Mm-hmm.
Oh, he perks up instantly when it comes to betting. And I really like that we're getting these very, very strong personality traits from a lot of the characters now. We are very sure of how a lot of this kind of stuff is going to go. We know Andy is going to be the tryhard. We know that Kevin is going to latch on to any kind of gambling. You know, we know that Creed is going to be like the weirdo. It's just all of these little things. You know, we know that Meredith is going to be drunk. Like, there's just so many little things from all these characters. And yeah, we get a good Kevin gambling moment here. We also, so this client annoys me so much.
I thought you were about to be like, this client annoys me very much and here is why. But I agree that, you know, this client, like you said, having the opportunity, like, oh yeah, I'm just going to use your money presumably to be able to go golfing and I'm going to keep the client that I already have, is really just not very cool. But I have to say, very understanding of him when he says that he will gladly play golf again with Kevin, but he has no interest in playing golf with Andy anymore. It would be so annoying to play golf with Andy.
Oh, see, and I read that scene so differently. I was so mad at him during that scene for saying he would play golf again with Kevin just to avoid paying him. That was lip service because Kevin was like, hey, you owe me like over $200 based on these bets that we placed. And he was like, you know what? Let's start a tab and we'll play again. That was just lip service so he can get away, never play with Kevin again and not be able to pay him. Another little slimy moment from Mr. Client.
Interesting. Okay. We read that differently. Cause I was like, I thought it was more about, I did think that it was like, oh no, I'm not going to pay you right now, but I didn't read it all the way as, no, I'm never going to pay you.
Oh, so he has no intention of paying. That's for sure.
Yikes.
Because everything he keeps saying, he was just so slimy. And then when he couldn't get out of the sand trap, I'm sorry, but courtesy as in golfing, if you cannot do that, like you pick up and you talk, you know what I mean? You take the stroke. You don't keep wasting everyone's time like that.
Exactly.
Very frustrating. Also, he had horrible form in that sand trap. He grounded his club, which is illegal and he should get a stroke penalty every time he did it. So just wanted to say that I was very upset with him being a terrible golfer.
So it's my understanding then that you were the one who continued to have your golf lessons as a kid while Andy was off over doing his nautical lessons.
I did. I didn't get the nautical lessons. Instead, I was the one on the golf course. Oh my gosh, Andy, I so get your whitewashness. I'm so bad. I get it. I'm sorry.
Oh my Lord.
It really was. All the kids in my town, you either played golf or you sailed.
Well, what's funny is like I think that that moment is meant to be for the person who's watching the show in most cases, that it's like Andy feels like he's in touch but he's not at all. Mm-hmm. And so like people watching the show are going, oh, I never had golf lessons. But we, for some reason, at my elementary school, we had golf lessons.
Bam.
So I can relate. I can't relate to, you know, going to the nautical lessons because it was in Missouri, so there were no nautical lessons to have. But in terms of there being golf lessons, yeah, we had those. And I always was dreading whenever we had the golf lessons coming up, because I'm like, no, I don't want to do golf lessons. It's so boring.
Oh, it's not boring. It's amazing. Anyway,
oh, so
golf's
boring.
Amazing. Okay. Now that we've established that golf is amazing.
Now we've established that golf is so boring.
Shall we just do another, like a quick little dive into what actually happens at the job fair?
Yeah. So as we kind of talked about, you know, we've got all these other places, all these other desks and kiosks that are just incredible. These job opportunities are awesome.
Which are all real, by the way. All of the other ones, except for Dunder Mifflin, are all actual companies. That were present at the job fair.
Was it like a real job fair and they just became a part of it? Or
I don't know. I just know that all the companies at the job fair were real organizations except for Dunder Mifflin.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So the rest of them were doing their thing, and they were just more interesting. And that, of course, was a struggle for Michael. So he, after the very awkward thing of being mean to the kid who wants to be a part of the job, he takes the stage and starts trying to get people to join Dunder Mifflin by putting the other companies down. And it's another time where Michael is just pushed past his limit. Mm. And he doesn't know any better. And
he should not be allowed to be around open mics. I'm sorry.
Agreed.
The man sees an open mic and he is like a moth to a flame. Like, he cannot stay off of that microphone. No one leave an open mic unattended around Michael Scott. Oh, also, fun little fact about the kid who he destroys the ego of. Is that the right way to say it? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
He is better known for his role as Frederick Crane on Frasier. So anyone who's out there who's watched Frasier, he is Frasier Crane's son, which is pretty neat. And I didn't realize that until I started giving a good look at him. And I was like, oh, that is Frederick Crane. So there we go. Anyone who's seen Frasier, you can totally take another look at this kid. It's totally him.
Basically, Michael and the gang walk away without any intern, it seems, at the time, because Dunder Mifflin is just not in comparison to the other companies. And
well, they can't offer a college credit or pay.
So why would you want to do that?
Nobody.
Whenever all these other places are offering so many opportunities. And I think Michael walks away with like the realization of, wow, what am I doing here? What is anyone doing here? Why would anyone, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's sort of having that really tough moment of trying to then, I think, almost convince himself that his job is worth it whenever all these other places are drawing in the utes. As he does say in the beginning, he wants to euthanize the place.
Which is such a good quote. I love that one. It's a good Michaelism.
Today I'm headed over to the job fair at Valley View High School to find some new interns. I want to get some fresh blood, euthanize this place.
So I think we've basically covered everything that's gone down in this episode, right?
We absolutely did. We've hit all the points. We've seen everything. I mean, the awkward moment at the end with Pam and Jim kissing and Andy and Kevin making weird music in the background is just a little too much to handle. But
oh, but they overcome and then they're like, why are we doing this? Let's just do it. And I like how Michael has a realization about Jim.
Today I did something stupid. I questioned myself and I will never do that again. Because I look at somebody like Jim Halpert and I think that guy could do anything he wants to do. He could do anything. And he chooses to work here selling paper. Just like me.
He sees Jim as like this really successful, cool person, and that Jim chooses to work at Dunder Mifflin. And I think that that's all of us were wondering, why is Jim choosing to work here? It's because Jim has, as he said in the beginning, he doesn't try. Like, he has a lack of ambition when it comes to his actual job because he's just not that into it. But Michael sees it as a positive, and it turned around Michael's mood for the day. And he saw of like, all right, this person who I respect chooses to work here, so it can't be all that bad. So I thought that that was a nice conclusion that Michael came to.
Yeah, I agree. And regardless of, I think that it shows Jim, hey, you can, if you do try, this is what can happen.
So we have a Dundee this week. What is it, Micah?
We do. Well, Tiff, this is exciting because this is one of the first times where there was a last minute breaking news update to our Twitter direct messages. And so I'm sending you some photos. This is live, folks. The reactions from Tiff are going to be live. Let me know when you get those photos, and then I'm going to start reading the direct message that we got.
Uh-oh. Wait, are you doing a bait and switch here?
No, not at all. So let me know when you have the images, and I'm going to start reading the direct message that we got into our Twitter. Do you see the photos?
Yeah.
Okay, so someone on Twitter, it was actually Derek Swistak, sent us the following messages. I was instructed by my 12-year-old son to send these over to you. Here's what he said. Can you IM these to @tall_beats with the caption, my 12-year-old son Logan made this countdown until Pretzel Day, New Year's Eve. He made it while watching his favorite show and listening to your great podcast. Hope you like it. So Derek's 12-year-old son made this awesome Pretzel Day countdown.
Oh my gosh.
And then said to his dad, Dad, can you please send this to my favorite podcast and let them know that I made this and I was listening to the podcast and watching The Office. So I'm about to be in tears because I think that's super sweet and super awesome. And this Pretzel Day countdown box is incredible.
Oh my gosh.
And right. So
wow.
Derek Swistek's son, Swistek, I am blown away.
Wow, I love the way the cubes, you could turn them for the numbers too. Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
This is
absolutely
amazing.
We should all have Pretzel Day countdown timers.
Wow. Wow.
So yeah, that is the breaking news Dundee that is happening.
All right,
today.
Let's do it. What are we going to call it? Breaking. This is breaking news Dundee. I'm thinking something like crafty, like the way Pam did for the Office Olympics. Like, let's see, because that's what this is kind of like. It's like you taking office supplies and making something
like
extraordinary out of it. Yeah, yeah.
The Flying Doves Dundee.
Ooh, Paper Dove Award.
The Paper Dove Award. I like how that sounds.
Yeah.
And we could give that to other people even. This could be the first, the inaugural Paper Dove Award.
I like it.
I love it. I love it. So this week's Dundee, the Paper Dove Award, in honor of Pam's office craftiness and the incredible craftiness of, as I've decided to call him, Son Swistak, putting together the most incredible countdown timer for Pretzel Day. You get the Paper Dove Award. Get on up here and accept your most deserved Dundee. Congratulations.
Wow. It's so creative. Keep calm. There's 143 yes. days until the next Pretzel Day.
Beautiful, amazing, awesome, exciting. And now I am inspired to make one of my own.
I know. I need a Pretzel Day countdown too. Yes. Yes, this can be awesome. A thing. Love it so much. And wow. Just, I love our listeners, Micah. I really,
Me
really
too.
Do. And I love hearing from them and all the great feedback we get over on our Twitter account. Ho ho! It's at tall_beats. So if you want to get in touch with us, go on over there and send us all kinds of fun office related things that we just absolutely love getting because we can never have enough office. And make sure you go over to The Incomparable and subscribe to become a member where you can go to our conference room Slack. Our conference room members only Slack where we chat about The Office. And if anyone needs anything, we answer questions over there. So it's pretty great to be a member over at The Incomparable. And please be back for next week's episode. We talk about Goodbye, Toby.
Goodbye, Toby. It's been nice.
I knew you were going to sing.
Hope you find your paradise, Toby. See you, Toby. Toby. See you, Toby. Toby. Toby's going away. Toby. One of my favorite moments in The Office. Toby's going away. Goodbye, Tiffy. It's been nice.
Don't call me Tiffy.